So hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here today. My name is Zach Nasipak. I'm currently a NASA postdoctoral fellow at Goddard Space Flight Center. Today, I'm going to kind of continue this discussion of resonances by focusing, instead of on tunnel resonances, transient R theta resonances and Emery's. This is work I've been doing in collaboration with Chuck Evans at UNC. So Preeti actually gave a really nice introduction to resonances, so I think I'll kind of try to move very quickly through this. So in the case here, I'm focused on transient orbital R theta resonances, which occur in Emery's when the radial and polar motion of the small body and an Emery form some low integer ratio. So here on the right is an example of a 1-2 R theta resonant geodesic, where I've suppressed the azimuthal motion and just projected the orbit into the poloidal plane. Now, an interesting feature of these R theta resonances is that they are very sensitive to initial conditions. So for instance, if I keep the frequencies of this geodesic constant, but I vary its initial polar position, then I can produce another unique trajectory here in this poloidal plane. Now, while I've plotted, you know, just geodesics here, we do expect that due to the gravitational self-force, the system will evolve through these resonances, and so it'll experience transient resonances, meaning that they will persist for a finite time scale that goes like epsilon or mass ratio to the minus 1/2. And we are particularly interested in R theta resonances driven by the self force because they will alter the evolution of orbital quantities like the frequencies in a manner that is different from when we are away from resonances. So kind of similar to what Preeti was showing before, we can look at kind of the evolution of our orbital quantities like the energy or the energy flux. And that will be related to the time component of the self force, which we can decompose in kind of this double Fourier series that depends on these phase parameters or angle variables, QR and Q theta, which basically parameterize the fast orbital radial and polar motion of the small body. And these highly oscillatory terms, at least away from resonances, right, they kind of wash out and we just get left with this zero, zero term. But during resonances, we'll get these stationary phases when we have, you know, just kind of the right combination of K and N here. And these additional modes will contribute to the secular evolution of our orbital quantities, like the energy. So this presents a number of complications for Emery's. First of all, similar to what was seen in those tidal resonances, these stationary phases lead to these kind of order epsilon, the minus 1/2 jumps in the orbital quantities that were first observed by Flanagan and Hinderer. And additionally, just like our resonant trajectories, which were very sensitive to the initial phase at which the Emery enters the resonance, you can see that things like the energy flux or the size of these jumps in the orbital quantities also vary with respect to the orbital phase, which was nicely shown in this paper by Flanagan, Hughes, and Rongstree. Now, altogether, these additional contributions from these stationary modes accumulate over the resonant time scale and then the rest of the n-spiral, which leads to kind of this post 1/2 adiabatic correction in the overall phase evolution of our Emery. Therefore, if we want to model our gravitational waveforms accurately to order epsilon to the minus 1/2, then we need to be able to accurately calculate these kind of higher Kn modes of the self force starting resonance. And while there's been a lot of good and important research in the last decade on these orbital resonances at Emery's, nobody has actually been yet calculated the full strong field gravitational self force during these resonances. So the focus of this work was to try to tackle this problem, but rather than going for the full gravitational self-force problem, we decided we'd just stick with the more simple scalar self-force toy problem and use this as a stepping stone for understanding how the self-force, and in particular, how the dissipative and conservative components of the self-force independently contribute to the secular evolution of the system, which can be captured by these kind of orbit average time rate of change quantities for the energy, angular momentum, and Carter constant. Now, I don't have time to overview our whole scalar self-force formalism. If you want to, you can read this archive paper, which goes into detail. Just say that we were able to go numerically calculate the scalar self-force experienced by a scalar charged particle following different R theta resonant geodesics and Kerr space-time. We then took that self-force data and then wanted to relate it to these kind of time averaged quantities. So to do that, we first leveraged the fact that during a resonance, you have the radial and polar frequencies are related. And so you can actually define some single resonant frequency here. And with this single resonant frequency, then define a single resonant angle variable Q bar is equal to this frequency times mean time. And basically this Q bar helps parameterize our motion along a given resonant geodesic here. We also introduce this initial resonant phase Q bar naught, which then allows us to set different initial conditions, which then will give us different resonant trajectories through this poloidal plane. So using this parameterization, you can go and you can relate the secular evolution of the energy, angular momentum, and Carter constant and to the self-force. And they're basically related by integrating over various components of the self-force over this resonant angle variable Q bar. Now, the kind of important things are, I would say these integrals really have two particularly interesting features. One of them is maybe a little bit obvious and expected from my introduction. These integrands here, though they are functions of Q bar, which we integrate over, they also, all these terms depend on the initial resonant phase, meaning that, okay, all these orbit average quantities are going to retain some dependence on the initial phase at resonance, which is what we've seen in the gravitational case. So nothing too surprising there. But there's kind of a second, more subtle thing about these integrals. If you actually go and you separate our self-force components here into the conservative and dissipative pieces, you'd find that just based on the forms of these integrals, the conservative contributions do not appear to strictly vanish. And this might be a bit of a surprise since, at least away from resonances, it is the dissipative component that is the only component that is responsible for these orbit average quantities. While the conservative component is supposed to be what just drives the non-secular perturbations to the motion. I mean, that's why we call them the dissipative and conservative components. Now, with that being said, you can appeal to other arguments like flux balance laws, which would demonstrate that, well, at least the evolution of the energy and angular momentum, those orbit average quantities, should only depend on the dissipative self-force because they must be balanced by the dissipative fluxes at infinity and the horizon. However, we do not have a similar flux balance law for the evolution of the Carter constant. So it is possible that the conservative perturbations do contribute to this quantity, at least during resonances. In fact, this would be consistent with results by Sochiro and collaborators, where they used a Hamiltonian formulation to kind of examine these types of flux balanced laws and found that during resonances, this Q dot quantity here retained some dependence on conservative or symmetric perturbations of the Hamiltonian. On the other hand, Finnegan and Hinderer have put out this integrability conjecture when they were working on these resonances. And that argues that the conservative perturbations should still vanish when looking at the secular evolution of the system at adiabatic order. So we decided with our numerical self-force data that we'd go and test the validity of these arguments by basically taking these integrals and replacing the full self-force components with either just the conservative or dissipative piece and find out how those different pieces independently contribute to these orbit averaged quantities. Okay, so we first decided that we'd test this just for the average time rate of change of the orbital energy and angular momentum, the quantities that are related to our fluxes. And we analyzed this for three different R theta resonances. So on the left here is a 1-2 resonant resonance. The middle is a 2-3 resonance. And on the far right is another 2-3 resonance, but as a different orbit where we've increased the eccentricity. Now, rather than plotting the full orbit average quantity, we've actually, you can notice that if you take these quantities that still have some initial phase dependence, then integrate out this phase dependence, well, the conservative contributions do completely vanish, and the dissipative components give you kind of this constant offset. So we subtract away these pieces.
Minutes.
Thank you. We subtract away these two pieces to better compare the conservative dissipative contributions to the energy and angular momentum flux. And so this is what we plot in all these figures. And you can see that, okay, in the black, we have the dissipative contributions to the energy and angular momentum. And those vary with the initial phase, Q bar naught, just as we expect across all the resonances. And meanwhile, the conservative contributions, these dotted lines, are all, basically lie with zero. They appear to vanish. Their contributions appear to vanish. And then we also have these kind of gray regions, which are some measure of the uncertainty in our conservative calculations. And we have this uncertainty because, as probably many of you are familiar with, when you calculate the conservative component, you need to regularize that piece of the cell force. And so that introduces some systematic error to our conservative values, which then get propagated into these calculations. Okay, so basically for energy and angular momentum, it looks like flux balance laws are satisfied during resonances. That should not be surprising. So what happens for the Carter constant? Well, when we do the same analysis for the Carter constant, we find, oh, now we do have kind of these more prominent smooth variations that are coming from the conservative component, the cell force. However, especially for the plots on the left and right here, for these two orbits on the outside, these contributions are completely dominated by our kind of numerical error estimates. Though the middle plot, while they're still relatively large errors, they do seem to kind of depart a little bit from zero. So maybe we are seeing some physical contribution from the conservative cell force. But also, this might actually just be some part of the singular field that we haven't properly regularized. And so at least within kind of these error estimates that I've shown here, we can't make any definitive statement about whether we're really seeing conservative contributions. And this was kind of the state of our research, as of a few months ago. And then kind of a breakthrough happened and that has come about in the last couple of weeks, thanks to two main improvements that I just want to show you really quickly. So this is all preliminary, but two improvements happened that improved these error estimates for the conservative component contributions to the Carter constant. First, I figured out a smarter way of regularizing this data, which helped improve things a little bit. But really, the second big thing was Anna Heffernan. She gave me new higher order regularization parameters for the scalar case. And that helped improve my conservative scalar cell force data. So here's kind of looking at that 2-3 resonance again before I implemented these improvements. And this is what it looks like when I include, my new regularization scheme and Anna's higher order parameters. And yes, the gray region is still here. It is just now smaller than the width of this dotted conservative contribution. And if you multiply it by an order of magnitude, you kind of start to see it. Okay, so what does this mean? Well, we calculated the scalar cell force to look at the impact of resonances on the secular evolution of an emery, at least a scalar charged emery. We found, unsurprisingly, the flux balance laws are still preserved, but we now have numerical evidence that conservative perturbations contribute to the secular evolution of the Carter constant during these resonances. Kind of seems to be a problem because that means we're going to need regularization procedures to calculate post-1/2 adiabatic effects. And additionally, if we have any errors in these conservative cell force calculations, they're going to accumulate over these resonant timescales, which means we need to be pretty good at regularizing and obtaining accurate calculations of the conservative cell force. Okay, I think I'm getting close to time, so I'll just leave kind of future work up here. And I guess if there's time, I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Okay, maybe a quick question. Okay. Juan.
Thank you for the nice talk. So you mentioned about this initial phase for the resonance. So when you build a waveform, including let's say multiple resonances, do you have to assign the freedom of different initial phases for each resonance, or is it are they all depend on the total initial phase of the orbit?
So this is the initial phase of when the system enters resonance, which is kind of a fuzzy thing. Because I'm focusing kind of making a geodesic assumption when I calculate the cell force here, the beginning of the resonance is well-defined because the system is always at resonance because I'm not doing actually any evolution. But this is kind of the trouble and why you get these post 1/2 adiabatic corrections is because there's kind of this funny, you know, there's not a clear line of, okay, here's the initial phase and you're now officially at resonance. There's some transition region that happens because of this new resonant timescale that you now have to model, which isn't usually incorporated in kind of our two timescale expansions or near identity transforms and things like that, which is why these, lead to kind of problems with our evolutions.